Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wiersen.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Great to be here with you again, Paul, on this Friday in August.
It is, you know, and you've been to the State Fair, and the State Fair is winding down, and football is in the air, and I've been watching for deer on Highway 69.
And did you find any?
Not on my grill, no.
You have to drive down. You do drive down on these Fridays from Stories City. And you were telling me before the broadcast, you have to be pretty careful on that.
Well, you do, especially now in the fall with rutting season where the deer are more active. So I watch the ditches more than the road.
So that you can avoid going into the ditches instead of staying on the road.
It all works together for an elderly driver.
We are glad you made it again today because we have another top-notch program in the works. In just a couple of minutes, few minutes, the superintendent of the Ames School District, Jenny Risner, is going to be here. And we have lots to talk about, including the opening of the new school year next Friday and construction of the new Ames High School.
Yeah, then later, Alex Pfeiffer of the Ames Historical Museum joins us with a look at some new exciting things going on there. And, of course, after that, Maggie Westfold will be here with another of her unique looks at life around Iowa. First, Dennis has the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
And there was plenty of news to report last week, Paul, starting Saturday when the Tribs ran a big piece. The Tribune ran a big piece about former Vice President Joe Biden's visit to the Boone Fairgrounds, part of his quest to become the Democratic Party's nominee for president. Biden told the crowd that next year's election is different than any other he'd taken part in because of the man who is in the White House, Donald Trump. Biden said the words presidents speak matter and that Trump is dangerous because he uses, in Biden's words, racist and hate-filled language. Saturday also brought word about the Ames School District's new school resource officer. Don Johnson becomes the district's second resource officer, and he will primarily be at Ames Middle School, but he'll be able to move around to elementary schools as well. We're going to talk more about this school story and others involving the Ames District with Superintendent Jenny Risner, live right here in just a few minutes. Politics and a groundbreaking made big news in Sunday's Tribune. The groundbreaking took place Saturday at Inness Grove Park in Ames, where more than 100 people showed up for the ceremony for the future of Miracle Lake Field, an all-inclusive playground. The new field and playground will include accessibility features such as ramps and padded surfaces, a music area, and a so-called cozy dome for children with autism who want to sit somewhere quiet. Construction expected to be finished by next spring. Now all about politics. Four Democratic presidential hopefuls showed up around these parts on Saturday, three of them in one place, Cafe Diem on Main Street here in Ames. The first to appear, Tom Steyer, who said no one could buy him. He's a billionaire. And he said he's in favor of free education, pre-kindergarten through college. Hours later, and still at Cafe Diem, Colorado Senator Michael Bennett took his turn. He talked about income inequality and education. Then on Saturday night, it was Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard's turn at Cafe Diem. She called for passage of a universal background check for gun purchasers. And then there was Montana Governor Steve Bullock, who also showed up at a coffee shop on Saturday, but this one in Nevada, the Farm Grounds coffee shop. He talked about everything from health care to campaign finance to the federal debt ceiling. One more story of note from last Sunday, a long takeout on some Ames musicians, poets, and comedians who are looking to find new venues in the wake of the closure of DG's Tap House on Main Street in Ames a few months ago. Tuesday brought word of some mindless vandalism that had taken place at the Ames Ford Lincoln car dealership in Ames on Friday night. Someone had thrown eggs at 40 or so vehicles at the dealership, which is on South Duff Avenue and Airport Road, and some of the vehicles appeared to have more damage than just from the eggs. Also a story about yet another visit by another Democratic presidential candidate to the area. This one took place Sunday at the Farm Grounds Coffee Shop in Nevada. Washington State Governor Jay Inslee showed up there. He said he could defeat President Trump in what he called the president's weakest areas, the climate and environmental protection. Tuesday also brought word about the success of the recent Rummage Rampage event in Ames. The rummage sale resulted in more than 116,000 pounds of furniture and other items being diverted from the landfill. And the fourth annual event also raised $33,000 for local nonprofits. Win-win all around. Wednesday's paper reported that a few homes in Collins had been evacuated on Tuesday after an ammonia leak was discovered at the Landis Cooperative. That leak was contained after a couple of hours. No reports of injuries. Also a story about the absentee voting process. It had started for the September 10th bond referendum for the proposed Healthy Life Center in Ames. Residents eligible for in-person absentee voting are now being allowed to vote at the Story County Auditor's Office in Nevada. The last day for in-person absentee voting is Monday, September 9th. Polls are going to open from 7 a.m. on September 10th until 9 p.m. Ames voters are going to decide whether to approve $29 million in bonds for the Healthy Life Center. Also Wednesday, word that the long-awaited project to extend Grand Avenue in Ames south to South 16th Street might start next year. That's an $18 million project designed to take some traffic off the often congested South Duff Avenue. When it's finished, it will increase the options for drivers wanting to travel north or south through Ames. And Wednesday's paper also had a story about the upcoming exhibit at the Ames History Museum. It's about Prohibition-era Ames, and we're going to talk about that later in this broadcast when Alex Fafer of the History Museum joins us right here live. Yesterday's paper had the story about another animal hoarding case in Ames. This was a bad one. This one involved more than 100 different animals being found at an apartment on Tuesday night. Only 41 of the creatures were alive. They were taken to the Ames Animal Shelter. Most of the animals were reptiles, everything from geckos to snakes to frogs, even a water dragon. Other creatures included several types of bird, fish, and hamsters. Also yesterday, word that Iowa 4th District Republican Congressman Steve King had held a town hall meeting on Tuesday in Boone. He said he had been to El Paso, the site of a mass shooting earlier this month. In another stop on Wednesday, this one in Urbandale, King made nationwide news when he said humanity might not exist if not for rape and incest. Those were the congressman's words. Yesterday's Trib also reported that a representative from a company in Indiana told Ames City Council members this week about plans to invest up to $30 million to provide new internet service to the city. As you know, the city council has been looking for ways to improve internet access. Metronet could provide what a company representative called a true fiber connection. The council took no action on this. We're going to take it up at a future meeting. Also word yesterday that several state lawmakers had stopped in Colo this week to look at a wind farm there. They went to find out what can be done to help the wind industry grow here in Iowa. And a report that the city of Nevada had joined the Main Street Iowa program, which helps cities in their efforts to revitalize downtowns and generate economic growth. Nevada joins 53 other Iowa communities that are in that program. Today's paper has a big story about the Ames Group that is opposing the September 10th bond issue for the proposed Healthy Life Center. The group is the Citizens of Ames for Responsible Economics, or CARE. It sent out mailers this week urging a no vote on the $29 million bond issue because of the proposed center's ongoing cost to taxpayers. Today's paper also reports that the Access Assault Care Center is raising money to repair one of its shelters in Ames. Access has three shelters in Story County, one in Marshall County. Also word, the construction of the $84 million Student Innovation Center at Iowa State University is on track for completion after the first of the year. And one more story about the third annual Chalk the Walk event in Ames, going to take place next Tuesday. Chalk the Walk means that you will have chalk available at various locations, the library, City Hall, Brookside Park, Duff Park, Country Gables Park, and a Daly Park, and you can go out and create your own artwork and positive messages across the parks and sidewalks, all legally and all for fun. And that, Paul, is our summary of the week's news from the pages of the Tribune. We should mention very quickly, you're going to be in a senior variety show in Ames tonight.
That's right. It's opening night tonight at 7, I think, and I am going to be, it's just a great thing. That troupe of folks is phenomenal. We have two people in their mid-90s who are doing vocal solos, and we have several musical group skits. It's going
to
be fun.
And what are you doing? Not to spoil it, but what are you going to be doing?
Well, they recorded me making the opening announcements, you know, turn off your phones, etc. Then I introduce the show on tape, and then I have a little walk-on part with a couple of skits. Other than that, I'm sort of a extra.
It's tonight at 7:30, and it's tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Ames City Auditorium, downtown.
That's very
Ames.
Good, yes, and I think we always have a good turnout.
And
a lot of sponsors give money, and there's a lot of money raised from admission.
Yep.
So
it's a good deal, and I'll be there in the audience to heckle. I mean, to appreciate your
performance. I'm sure you'll be supportive.
You bet. Jenny Risner, Ames School Superintendent, up next after this brief timeout. Thank you. Welcome back to Local Talk. This is Friday, and it is 11 minutes after the hour. I'm Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson.
You must be Paul Wearson. And we have a guest today. Our first guest today, actually a couple of guests, is, and I'm going to pronounce the name correctly, because over the years here, over the year you've been here, Jenny, on radio and everywhere else, it's been either Risner or Risner, and you've just told me it's...
Risner.
Jenny Risner, the new superintendent of the Ames School District, who's making her first appearance here on KHOI. She's joined by the Ames District's public relations person, extraordinaire Eric Smith. Welcome to both of you.
Extraordinaire.
Thanks. Extraordinaire.
I'm going to come back.
Our expectations are growing.
Ms. Risner, you have been here now for a year. You got here last July 2nd, as a matter of fact, and you had to hit the ground running very fast. You came from Ocean Beach, the school district in Washington State, all the way out to Ames, Iowa here, a couple of thousand miles away. What was it like those first few weeks? You're a few weeks away from the opening of school. The Ames High construction project is not underway, but the plans have been going on for a long time. What was it like here?
Lots going on in the district, and the need for me to jump right in, and so it was one of those things where you start quick. The good thing was I actually came a little bit early, so I did have time to kind of settle in before the beginning of school. But with where the district was in relation to the building of the high school and some other projects that were going on, it was definitely a hit the ground running and get up to speed quickly.
Well, now that's a shock to come. How was your first Iowa winter, Jenny?
It was rough, and so I have not complained one day this summer. I said in the middle of winter, I will never complain about the heat again, ever. So I have embraced the humidity and the summer, or the winter was rough.
But I understand that one of the motives for coming to this part of the country, your daughter is at Kansas, and she's going to school there. And I think, wanted to have leadership in a school system in a university town.
I did.
That was attractive to you.
It was. And so... It has been one of my goals to be in a university town. The partnerships and the opportunities that we can create between the public school system and the university are just incredible. And so I saw that opportunity, and that was the real draw for me to come to Ames, Iowa. I will say my daughter is actually transferred to Iowa State.
She's getting closer to mom.
She's getting closer. And,
we know that's a quality education at Iowa State.
It's excellent. And my son was at the University of Hawaii, and he too is going to transfer to Iowa State and finish this year.
Boy, is he going to have a shock.
Yes.
No whole new wardrobe.
Let's talk about some of the issues that you have encountered here in the district, and maybe the biggest, the most high-profile one right now is the construction of the new Ames High. Just briefly, and you know this, but for our audience, the bond issue to build it, $110 million, passed in April of last year. $5 million of that included money for adding on to some elementary schools. We're going to talk about that. But talk about the new Ames High School. First off, why was it needed? Why is it needed? And how will it be better than the existing Ames High?
Mm-hmm. If you've ever toured Ames High, there have been additions that really, they prohibit a lot of the things we need to do. A lot of wasted space, a lot of add-ons, not efficient. The building is old and not efficient and doesn't really meet the needs of our growing student
population.
What is
the date on that old building?
You know, Eric, do you have an idea on what that date is?
The old building? Oh, well, it's kind of a patchwork of a building. I think it started 1960 and then
right.
It has 15 additions put onto it. 13 different elevation changes.
I think it's 87 doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. All the doors in that.
The doors, yeah. Yes.
Security is an issue, too, then.
Exactly.
So how it's a modern high school you're putting together, and modern high schools look a lot different from high schools even from 20 years ago. How is this? Give us a visual image what the new high school is going to look like.
Yeah, the goal is really for our kids and our community to use this facility and want to be there. It's very open as you walk in. It's very inviting. The tones are going to be really inviting. There's common spaces and flexible seating, that are modern and lend the feel of kind of a college environment. As you go into the academic wings, the difference will be, there is a lot of collaboration areas. So the classrooms, they'll have flexible seating, and you'll have more technology around the room, and then the ability for students to go out of the room into these collaboration areas. And that's really exciting for us. The concept is that not necessarily will teachers be stuck in their one classroom, but rather to improve efficiencies and be able to serve growing populations, teachers travel, maybe more so than students travel.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, is there also an industrial arts section here where they have what we used to call shop?
Yes.
Yeah. You've got shop.
We've got shop. Yes, we do. And it'll be a beautiful career technical education wing with a lot of really important pieces like roll-up doors so that you can get equipment and machinery and get to things easily. We'll have an expanded business area. And it's just – it's really state-of-the-art.
One of the things, unfortunately, we have to think about these days in schools is security. And I know that the board has talked about this. It's part of the plan. Without being too detailed, because you're not going to give away secrets, how will this school, the new one, be more secure than the existing school?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of additional visual opportunities to monitor students, of course. That's number one. In the building we're currently in, obviously with 16 or 15 additions and 87 exterior doors, you know, really that ability to see students, the way the building is laid out, lots of straight line visuals for adults to see students. In addition, enhanced camera systems, the ability to lock down quickly and lock down wings. So you can, you know, if you were to get an intruder in, you can actually lock down wings with a push of a button.
And the modern school is designed so that anyone coming from the outside has to go through the office.
Right.
In the old days, you could walk right down the hall, you know. And so that's any new school I've seen designed now has that situation where you have to go through the office.
Yes.
Another great thing about technology, and I teach here at the Ames School System for RSVP. I teach fifth graders public speaking.
I love it.
And I saw you're at Meeker. The teachers have mics. Lavalier microphones. Mm-hmm. Sounds silly, but you know, if you're projecting your voice all day, that's really great to be able to talk at a normal tone and for the kids to hear you.
It's excellent.
These are little things.
Here's the
great technology.
Yes.
That you have at school now. Yeah.
That's exactly it. And the classrooms will have a lot of those features that we haven't had before.
Let's talk about the schedule. You broke ground a couple of months ago. When is this going to be completed? People going out there right now can see a little bit of action going on. The new school is going to be built on the basic, the parking lot footprint of the existing school. What's the schedule for this?
Yes. The new Ames High is set to open August 2022. The entire project then would be completed with the demolition of the old building by or around September 2023.
So the parking lot becomes the building, and the building becomes the parking lot.
Right.
That's a great inventive way to go about it.
It is. It is, right? Yes.
So Story Construction, they've been great to work with, first of all, but they've actually phased this in a really intelligent way. So right now they're working on the south side of Ridgewood, which is really practice fields right now. So for this academic school year, we're going to be able to use our current parking lot, and then they're going to install the new parking lot before they tear into the current one. So
what's the first thing I thought of?
Oh.
At what point do you have to disabuse the parking lot?
And that was a concern. And I would say that in our original planning, it was gone. And so we were looking at alternative locations within the community that kids could come, park, and then we transport kids from those locations. Story Construction actually was the one that came back to us and said, hey, we have a plan where we could do this phasing and be able to keep that parking lot open. And so, again, I echo what Eric said. They have just been tremendous in working with them and planning.
Part of this project includes a swimming pool, a new swimming pool. And it's going to be a different animal because right now the city of Ames, the public has access to the pool at the existing high school. But that's going to change, isn't it, when the new pool is built at the new Ames High? Please talk about that.
It is. And I'm just one of the things I'm so impressed with Ames in general is just the phenomenal partnerships that we have between the school and the city, one of those being the use of the pool. We're excited as a district to gain some time back that we can actually use the pool as part of our education for students. So students, because we moved to kind of a different scheduling model at the high school, and we'll be even deeper into that by the time we get to the new building, we'll have blocks of time so that students are able to get in the pool. That they won't have just a 40-minute, 45-minute, or 50-minute class. They'll have a 90-minute class, so they'll actually be time to change and get into the pool and get out. So some of those things enabled us to be able to do that. And we'll continue our partnership with
ACAC.
ACAC. I get ACPC.
You got to learn all the acronyms.
I know. It's a lot. And I usually do pretty good, but so that partnership will go, and they've been great to work with, and there'll be some scheduling challenges at times, but for the most part, I think we've got a pretty good plan in place as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. No, that's wonderful. I really credit you with stepping into a high school situation or a school situation where there's great transition happening when you're starting your own position. So you have all the accoutrements of being able to learn a new community and get to know people and staff, and then here we are building a new high school. So in a way, you're present at creation. On the other hand, it's overload, isn't it?
It's not. It's exciting. This is what I love. It's so exciting to watch this come forward, and we had bid day yesterday, and it was just an amazing process. And I think the team that we have working together, from architects to Story Construction to our district staff, is just top-notch. The community is going to get an amazing building, and people have just really, really worked hard to make sure we're getting the most efficient, the best prices that we can get.
Part of that bond issue, $5 million of it, was to add classrooms to three elementary schools, Mitchell, Meeker, and
Sawyer,
yes. Right. Now, one of the issues, I want two questions. How's that going? But why was there a need for added classrooms? Because, as you know, those schools had either been remodeled or built recently. Should have been big enough, but they weren't. What happened?
It's hard to speak to kind of the thought process that occurred before me. I think that what happened was they built the buildings for the current enrollment. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's challenges in projecting enrollment in a college town. You know, that runs into some difficulties. I'll go back and say that the original high school building was actually much smaller than the building that we're building. Mm-hmm. Because when I came in and I evaluated the enrollment and the enrollment trends, we would have opened the building and today that building would be full. So the size that we had originally gone with, had we have stayed with that size, we'd open the building and it would be full. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just been kind of a hesitancy to over-predict enrollment. Mm-hmm. And so, and I understand that, you know, you don't want to have classrooms that sit empty. But we are in a situation where our elementaries are full.
And what's the status now on that project?
We are currently, our first building that we will start in on is Mitchell. And mm-hmm. so Mitchell Elementary, as you know, there is lots of new apartments being built down there.
Yes.
Mitchell is currently full, or pretty close to capacity. And so that'll be our very first, and that's underway. Mm-hmm. So we're working with architects and developing that plan. And I think that the finish date will be December-ish 2022.
A year and a half?
Yeah.
I think so.
For Mitchell.
For Mitchell.
Yes. And the others then.
And the others will then, as we're working on Mitchell, then we're going to step into. Okay. So they'll be going simultaneously.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, the key is good planning, and the difficulty is anticipating the future.
Yeah.
And you don't know what area of the city will grow.
Right. Well, I can tell you this on enrollment. You know, I've looked at past enrollment data, and we had, you know, probably a decade where we were very steady on enrollment,
right.
you know, year
right.
after year after year.
Right.
And for the past 3 years, it has spiked really drastically compared to those previous years. And a lot of that, I think, comes from open enrollment and parents wanting to send their students to the Ames District.
How do we know that's not going to continue and cause more problems space-wise?
It's a good problem to have. It's a great problem to have. And I would echo what Eric said. We have a lot of open enrollment. This year it's been very interesting that our kindergarten has just our kindergarten enrollment is just through the roof.
Hmm.
And the majority of those are actually boundary students. So they're within our boundary. So we're seeing some of those shiftings of neighborhoods. And then, of course, the city has their 2040 plan.
Right.
And I'm in communication with them on that and the planning that goes with that for us as a district.
We only have about a minute left, and there's so much to talk about.
In the show?
Yeah, but
in our part of the show.
Oh, my goodness.
We could have done an hour, Jenny.
School opens next Friday for many of the grades. What's going to be different? What will parents and students see differently this year compared to last?
I'm so excited about this coming year. We have put into place some new programs where we're going to be slowly rolling out a new elementary reading program, a K-12 or P-12 new model for discipline. PBIS is kind of, you'll hear PBIS, it's a positive behavior intervention system, and that'll be common throughout all of our buildings. So I think what parents will see is a much, much more alignment, kind of a definition of what does our reading program look, what does our math program look like, and what are those core courses and things. There's also a lot of additional support in the buildings. We've taken our counselors out of the teaching rotation so that they're available to provide counseling for students. We've added a behavior interventionist to every building. And then some additional social workers as well. So, and an additional SRO, school resource officer. So lots of really positive things that help support students at the building level.
Well, talk briefly, 30 seconds, about that new school resource officer. What will he be doing? We talked about him in the newscast off the top here. What will he be doing?
One of the great things is the model that Ames has. It's a really progressive model. So it's more about really building relationship and supporting families. And so it's not really a school resource officer walking around saying, hey, we got this. We got, you know, and arresting kids. I think that sometimes that's the mindset when people hear school resource officer. This is really more about building relationships. Of course, there's the safety component as well.
Yeah.
We'll be able to serve buildings at a more deeper level.
We have to run. Would you come back?
I would love to.
I look forward to it. I can see by seeing Jenny and interacting with her, she's extremely capable. I can see why you won over any other candidate.
Well, I'm glad I won.
Jenny Reisner, formerly known as Jenny Risner.
Yeah.
The Ames School Superintendent Eric Schmidt, public relations person extraordinaire. Thank you both for being with us. We're going to have you back, okay?
I am so glad. Thank you so much.
Well, stay with us, everyone out there. There's much more ahead. After this brief timeout, we'll be hearing from Alex Fafer of the Ames Historic Museum He'll step into the guest chair, and later, Maggie Westfold will drop by with another of her unique looks at life around Iowa. Welcome back, everyone. This is Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson, along with Dennis Hart. Coming up later in the half hour, Minutes with Maggie, featuring our own Maggie Westfold.
And right now, we are pleased to welcome back one of our Local Talk Friday regulars. You are a resident, I guess. You're here every month,
right,
which is
we'll
great.
We'll consider a resident, yeah. Right?
Alex Pfeiffer of the Ames History Museum, and notice I got the name right. You are changing the name of the Ames Historical Society to the Ames History Museum. Please explain,
yeah,
sir.
I appreciate you grabbing that, because it's a little early here. I might have even brushed right by that one. Yeah, we're kind of rebranding from the Ames Historical Society, which will still be internally. You can still write your checks to that name. But we're rebranding as the Ames Historical Society. The Ames History Museum, and we feel like it better suits what we're doing for the community. There was a few things that we wanted to change with the Ames Historical Society. One thing that bugged staff internally was obviously the AHS initials are the same as Ames High School, and I'm guessing you were just talking about Ames High School right here.
I
saw my buddy Eric in here. So that was always a kind of a thing we were struggling with, and we knew we needed to kind of update our logo a little bit because it was a little hard to use. So we thought, you know what, actually, this is the perfect time to rebrand as museum, which we'd wanted to do for a few years. But we knew that, you know, sometimes for my generation at least, the term historical society feels a little exclusive, a little elitist, a little bit. You know, you're not quite sure if it's for you. You know, you walk, you think you might have to be a member to go there. That
sounds like only certain people are admitted.
Right? Exactly. You have to be of a certain caliber to come in. So I think with the term museum, people see that and instantly know this is a place where I'm welcome to come in, view things. I don't have to be a member or have an appointment or anything like that. So I think it'll be a great transition for us here.
And we should point out, you are right next door to us here on Douglas, between Main and Fifth, on the same side of the street. In fact, we share a wall.
We do share a wall,
It is a great place. I have spent a lot of time there because, as you know, I'm a history buff, as is Mr. Wearson over here.
Yes.
We love history. You are a great repository of this community and Central Iowa's history. And you have periodically new exhibits, special exhibits that go in. You've got a big one coming up.
We got a big one coming up. So, yeah, you mentioned you like history.
Love history.
How about a nice glass of wine or a cold beer? Do you like that, Dennis?
Are you offering right now for us?
How about on next Saturday?
Yeah.
You could come down to the Ames Historical Society's grand opening for our next exhibit, Uncorked, The Spirited Uncorked. History of Alcohol in Ames. And we are going to throw a little beer garden party in our parking lot. So that'll be Saturday, August 24th. And if you were at the KHOI birthday party last week, which I know there were a lot of people there, you already know the location. So it's right there in our parking lot.
In fact, that party never ended. It's still going on. And this is just a continuation.
People out there
They're still leaning on there. Yeah, I've been trying to get in my parking space all week.
So well, actually, from your when I read the article about your opening of Uncorked.
Yeah, and the Tribune on Wednesday's edition front page.
That
was wonderful.
All these people will be twisting in their graves.
There's a few. You know, Farwell Brown, our founder, He was what we'd call a teetotaler. He didn't sip the alcohol too much, but we're telling both sides of the story here for sure, not just the alcohol fueled Visha stories and things like that.
And this is a great story, and let's talk about this. We have a little bit of time to talk about this. Ames was founded by John Blair, who laid out this community as an alcohol-free town. That was part of the deal. Explain that.
That was part of the deal, yeah. So when you bought when you got your deed for your land here in Ames and you bought a lot in the city, it was laid out right in your deed that said no spirituous alcohol could be sold on the premises, on your property. Otherwise, the property would revert back to the railroad company that owned it. So yeah, pretty high stakes there if you sold it. So that's 1864 when the town was founded, and John Blair was planting towns every 9 miles all the way from pretty much the Mississippi River, working his way over to the Golden Spike over there. So he did a good chunk of Iowa and even Nebraska, like Blair's Nebraska's name.
And this was
him.
The deal in every one of his spots, right?
I don't know about everyone for sure, but at least here it was. So I think it's possible that that was happening along the way in some town, because he was not a proponent of alcohol. He did not support alcohol at all.
And he didn't mind exercising his power.
No, he did not.
Your business had to revert back to the railroad. Were there clandestine things happening anyway?
Oh, you know what? Well, 4 years after the town was founded, actually just across the street from us, one of our other neighbors, right where the Octagon Arts Center is, there was the Sherwood Hotel. And in 1864, so just 4 years after the town was founded, a young man, Mr. Day, and his wife came and opened up a saloon in town, and quite a few women in town did not like that. They all got together, marched down there, and they pretty much kicked him out of town, mm-hmm. Caring Nation style, hatchets, sledgehammers, inch of beer on the floor. It's a fun story. There are different versions of this story that exist, so we're telling a nice little, our kind of cleaned up version of it, but we have some of the original resources that show these three different stories that sometimes contradict each other, which is a problem that you have to deal with in history. So we're kind of using this as a cool teaching moment to show what do we decide is truth or fact? Something that we debate a lot recently.
Well, being a sort of a historian myself, mm-hmm. Old Senator Moynihan used to say, everyone has a right to their own opinion, but not their own facts.
Right.
But when you look at history, that's your job, to divine what the truth mm-hmm. is from a variety of sources. What's the most credible thing?
Exactly.
And any incident has been distorted by retelling.
Mm-hmm, for
sure. So you have to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, you do. And that's with that story, too, particularly the three versions. I think the earliest one we have was written almost 25 years after the event. And two others were written 45 years after the event. And that's all that we have that exists, because the newspaper doesn't exist from 1868. But one of those from 48 years later was a person that was involved in the incident, Dan McCarthy, who was the Justice of the Peace. So that's one of those. Yeah. Do you give his a little bit more credibility because he was actually there? Everyone else in town was there. It was a very small town. So the people that wrote about it were in the area. But facts get distorted. Mm-hmm. Did they make the story seem a little, Carrie Nation, who busted down saloons in that same style, she didn't start until 1900. So has that, did that his part of history play a part 15 years later when those stories were written? Did that kind of taint their memory a little bit, possibly? It's hard to say.
And you want to talk about how the connection to the present day. Dan McCarthy was the father of Emma McCarthy, who married C.G. Lee, a lawyer in town. And yes, Emma McCarthy Lee Park is named for Dan McCarthy's daughter.
That is correct.
To this moment, great connection there. just one of those little historical facts. Now, I believe the Sherwood Hotel, when they attacked that one, when they threw that guy, that was bought later, wasn't it, by William West, one of the first mayors of Ames, and it became the Arlington Hotel.
Yeah, actually, I believe he owned it. I'd have to look at the time frame on that. I don't remember if he owned it first. It had a couple different hotel names.
It did.
But yeah,
Sherwood and Arlington.
Yep, Arlington, and then West, who was our first mayor, like you said. Yeah, he was, I believe he might have been the one that Sherwood opened it. I believe he built the hotel originally, uh-huh. and then, West took it on later.
And he didn't last as mayor very long because he didn't want to be mayor.
No, that's one I wish we knew a little bit more about. The council, I haven't looked at the council minutes myself, but they're very brief. But I don't know if he just took the job because no one else would, but it was only a couple months.
Now, we're talking here about the early era.
Early era, yes.
Now, it was an uncorked cover Prohibition era, too?
So we do have a little, so we do it the entire history of alcohol names as best we can, because We don't have a lot of great artifacts from the Prohibition era because Ames was pretty dry, so there isn't a lot to show. You know, we have a couple clippings of some anti-alcohol rallies and things like that, but we're covering it from all the way from, like I said, the dry founding, and we're also telling you what Iowa was like because Iowa has a unique alcohol story too. We started Prohibition in 1916, not in 1920, so 4 years earlier by the state here. Mm. But we're going all the way up to, I'm sure a lot of people in town still remember those state liquor stores that we had in Ames.
I certainly do. You had to have a little book.
Yes, you had to get a permit. So it's like a driver's license. Like today we just figured it's a right. But back then it was a privilege to actually get your alcohol permit.
And they had the big liquor warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there any evidence at all during Prohibition of a secretive speakeasy somewhere in Ames?
So that's one that we've been struggling with how to work into the exhibit, because they're so at that point Ames was very conservative and dry, mainly because of the college. So
right.
We know there are tons of little mentions about speakeasies in Boone and Nevada. Now, since we're talking 1920s, there aren't too many people around that we can ask about, hey, did you go drink in a speakeasy, you know, back then?
Right.
So the newspaper, we can't find anything on there. There are rumors about the Sheldon Munn having a speakeasy in the basement.
Ah.
And I think that's, you know, as people have been in that building a little more since the 70s when it closes a hotel, there's kind of a back door off the alley that leads down to a nice little tiled room that I think possibly might have been an old, what they called a smoker back in the day. This is pre-Prohibition, so in the teens, it was a smoker, a place where the guys could go down from the ballroom, smoke their cigarettes, fill up the room, you know, cuss and swear and all those things that they couldn't do in front of the ladies. So it's possible that might have been something going on there, you know, especially if it was just a smoker. It could have easily transitioned into a speakeasy of some kind. But I think, without a doubt, the Sheldon Munn having its fourth floor ballroom, that was the place where things were going on. So I don't know if there was for sure a speakeasy in there, but I can probably bet without a guarantee that alcohol was coming in through those back doors and getting into that building.
Let's
some
talk
way.
About those state liquor stores that Paul remembers so well.
Yeah.
My wife told me yesterday when I told her what we were going to be talking about, she remembers when we were here in the late 70s going into the state liquor store and having to sign her name to get some liquor. For those who don't understand, you couldn't sell liquor in supermarkets. There were no private liquor stores.
It was
out
just
there.
The state of Iowa was selling it, and they would set up special state-owned liquor stores in town. Some towns had more than one. Sometimes it was a per capita thing. But so Ames actually, so that started right in about 1935, I believe, or 36, they started setting up these liquor stores. And immediately at that point, representatives of students from the university, the Ames City Council, write to the Iowa Liquor Department and say, we don't want a liquor store. They're not even offered one. They just flat out tell them, we don't want one. We don't want it for the college students here. We think it's going to cause trouble. And so for almost 30 years, Ames is without a liquor store when everyone else in the state is having it. So we didn't get one until 1963 is when we first got it.
We were the last big town in Iowa not to have a state liquor store, is that right?
Yeah, at that point, right before we got it in 63, we were the largest city in the state of Iowa without a liquor store. And according to the Ames Tribune, when they mentioned that, the two busiest liquor stores in the state were Boone and Nevada.
Well, you know,
quite a big population here.
A lot of people don't realize that wasn't just law. That was an amendment.
Yes.
You know, Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that out there during the wildest time in Visha, there might be a ghost of a man with a celluloid collar walking around with his, what did I tell you?
Right? I could see it, yeah. If Farrell Brown, I'm sure he had a few things to say during the Visha riots, and if he was alive during the last one when it got canceled, they certainly would have had some opinions.
Yeah, that's the irony of all this. We were the last big town in Iowa not to have one, and yet Visha was canceled partly because it became too much of a drunken fest.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Now, I should add, my wife only went into the liquor stores if we were having a gathering for friends and buying
wine. Of course,
wine. That was
yes.
it. That was the only reason she ever went.
Yes, you wanted to make sure your friends were able to drink. Yes, exactly.
So how did that go away then? The liquor stores?
The state liquor
away.
Stores?
Yeah.
So 1986, that's when the state decided to get out of the liquor store business. I'm not exactly sure why that transition happened right then. But at that point, then they started to liquidate all their sales. So there's pictures in the newspaper of like 40% off bottles. You could go in and get your favorite brands real cheap. And we had a couple in town. The when it first opened in 63, it was in what we call the Ward Plaza on South Duff, and that's where Walmart is today. And that was like a Montgomery Ward kind of big box store kind of a thing, kind of similar to a Walmart or a Target. And so you kind of just went in the back of the building there, and you can order it from the counter. Yeah, and usually you had to look up. There was a chart, and you'd say, give me a 1208, which would be a Smirnoff vodka, or a 2803, that'd be a bottle of brandy, and then they'd write it down in your little permit because you could only get so many bottles per month. That was the other thing. It wasn't just going in and saying, well, you have to buy it from the state. They're still regulating it. So they're only letting you buy so much at a time or for a certain period, which today is not the case. You could go up and, I don't know, load up a whole pickup full from Hy-Vee. I don't think they'd say anything to you.
Well, at some point, they passed liquor by the drink.
Yes, and then, yes.
Do you know the date on that?
Yeah, that was 1964. That was the next year. So that's that 63, 64. That's a big change in Ames alcohol history right there with the liquor by the drink. Before that, you'd go buy your bottle at the state store. Well, you'd have to go to Nevada and get it at the state store. And you'd go to a place like the Rainbow Cafe or Frango's Cafe, and you'd order two setups. So they bring you two little glasses filled with ice and sometimes Coke if you want a Coke with it. And you'd make your own little rum and Coke, that
so
kind of thing, sitting right there
at your table.
Basically, yeah. And it was fine to bring it in. Restaurants let you bring in your bottle. There was nothing wrong with that at all.
But they could not sell it to you.
But they couldn't sell it to you. That was the thing.
And then, ironically, you're carrying in your car an open container.
Exactly right.
All these laws.
All of this is just fascinating stuff when you think about this going on until the 1980s or so.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And you're going to be exhibiting all of this. Talk about your display. What will people see when they come to your museum?
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. We've been painting walls and decorating this place with beer crates and bottles and things like that. We are just about done with our second week. We have one more week of install, and yesterday I've officially said it, the speakeasy we have built in the exhibit is done. So a speakeasy, for those of you who don't know it, is a Prohibition-era bar that you were meant to speak easy about, talk quietly, because you did not want people to know about
it. A little door in
the door. Yes, some places have a little, like a think of a mail slot, but up at eye level where you'd go in.
Joe sent me.
Yep, Joe sent me, Benny sent me, and then you could get in there. So we built, since we don't know Ames had an official speakeasy, we thought we would bring one back to life, and so we've built a two- or three-person bar in the Historical Society, if you believe it or not. I never thought I'd say that when I started working here 7 years ago. We built a bar in the museum. But you can go in and actually laid into the bar top. We have worked in some examples of some bootlegging stories that we have found in the newspaper. People getting caught trying to deliver with trucks loads of stuff. People from Chicago with lists of Ames residents they were supposed to deliver to.
Wow.
So it's really cool.
Reputations destroyed. Yes. Now, during your party, I suggest you show up in a pinstripe double-breasted suit.
Yes, if you want to wear 20s, that would be great. Yeah, you can come on and get a drink. And we even have some uncorked Ames History Museum koozies to the first 100 or 200 visitors that come into the exhibit. You can get a free koozie along with that, too.
When does this open up?
So the opening is officially when the opening event starts. So Saturday, August 24th at 5 o'clock is when it'll start. And we'll be having the beer garden open from 5 to 9. And then the exhibit will be open for about 10 months after that.
Starting Tuesday?
Saturday. I'm sorry. Yeah. So after the party on Saturday, the next time we'll be open will be our normal hours, Tuesday through Saturday.
So the first 100 starts on Tuesday.
Yes. The first is at the party.
At the party.
At the beer garden party. Come and if you're one of the first people there, you will get a free koozie to go with it.
Paul, you can get in line if I'm not there. Okay.
Well, I'm trying to find a double-breasted suit.
we got to go. Alex Faber, it's a pleasure having you here.
Dennis sent me. Yeah. Thank you so much.
See you back next month.
We're at 416 Douglas, and join us next Saturday, August 24th at 5 p.m.
You bet. Stay tuned. Maggie Wearson. Maggie Westvold, who
I'm
is not married
now,
to Paul Wearson, is here next. are back with more of Local Talk Friday at 10 minutes before the top of the hour. And as I always say, this is one of our favorite parts of the program. We call it Minutes with Maggie.
And that means one of our favorite people, Maggie Westfold, is here to give us one of her unique takes on life here in Iowa. Maggie.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, KHOI listeners. And thank you, Dennis and Paul. It's nice to be back. I think the other day seeing a young driver in a driver training car is what sparked this one. I'm going to give you a few memories from my teen years and learning to drive. What an emotional time that can be, both for teenagers and parents. I have one really vivid memory that's typical of what I put my poor dad through before I had a license, as I insisted he let me practice while he sat in the passenger seat. We were driving to Nevada, and I got to drive, and Mom and a couple of my brothers and sisters were in the back seat. So we're approaching the edge of town, and Dad said that I should stop at the gas station so we could fill the tank. Now, things got a little more interesting when Dad said I was going to need to gun it a little as we pulled in, as the driveway by the tanks was a little slight uphill grade. So in my teenage mind, I heard the gun it, so gun it I did. With the help of a guardian angel, the car landed inches clear of the gas pumps. Mom, poor Mom, from her back seat perch, was pretty clear with those feelings. Mike, you get back behind that wheel and you stay there. Okay, so I was done driving for that day. I truly believe that what gets a teenager through that experience of learning to drive is their inherent fearlessness. They just take it on head first and assume all will be fine. You when you don't know enough yet to be afraid of a challenge, you'll take on the world. I found a poem in my writing archives about an experience I had after I'd gotten my driver's license, and I think you'll get this picture pretty clearly. This is called Flying Low. From your perch on our back stoop, a quarter mile away, you watch my dehydrated contrail following your one and only set of wheels, flying low. Cross country, past the Howells, then past the McIntyre place, piloted by my 16 years of all-knowing. There is such thrill for me as that fintail Dodge floats on top of country gravel, then fishtails as I break into a right turn. Fearless. Leadfoot dumb. So cool. Careening south on the home stretch, I slower to a crawl as I approach our drive and see you sitting there. Oh, crap. I maneuver my best test drive, turn-in, and park job. You chastise, yes, but there is no thunder. There are really firm words. Your pipe stem points straight at me in your extended hand. Never again. Got that?
Oh, that brings back memories. Goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Now, you know, of course, when I was in high school, cars were already pretty much switched over to automatic transmission.
Yeah, I drove automatic.
But Mr. Boster, our teacher, insisted on dealing with the dealership to get a straight stick because he thought everyone should at least know how to do the H. Mm-hmm. And so it was really hard. There was a lot of jerking going on. And then I remember he was a man of few words, and a girl was driving, and we were going to angle park, and she hit the curb at a high. And all Boster said was, well, there's the curb.
I remember taking driver ed in high school. It was mandatory in California back then. Driver training was mandatory.
It was mandatory.
You actually got to drive a car, but your teacher had a brake on his side. He could brake it. Uh-huh. And so I'm first time behind the wheel of this automatic transmission car. We get up on Highway 99 in Fresno, California, and it's an entry point to an on-ramp with a stop sign. So I stop, and then I go, and I'm scared to death. And I start going, and I would have crashed just right into oncoming traffic, but our teacher, whose name I can't remember, hit that brake, and we slammed, stopped. And he said, "Would you like to try that again, Mr. Hart?" That was my first driving experience.
We don't forget those, do we?
No, no.
And, you know, my own memories of those kind of things is why I let my husband do the training. When it came to – yeah, I had no desire to sit in that seat with my kids driving.
Well, you know, you got your license was here at the Bandshell Park.
Is that right?
There was a driver's license station there, and you had to, of course, take your written test. And then he did a driving test with a patrolman, who had a sidearm. And so what you really dreaded was the parallel park.
Oh, I failed that.
You know, it's
I
just sweating. Yep. It's just like the day before your execution, you know.
Yeah.
And so I passed that. And I missed one question on the test. Mm-hmm. It haunts me now. Mm-hmm. The question was, do you have dim or bright lights in fog?
All right.
I put bright lights.
It's dim, yeah.
It was the only question I missed.
Oh.
Maggie, thank you. This was, as always, delightful.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we'll see you back very soon, Maggie. Uh-huh. You have been listening to Local Talk Friday. I'm Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Local Talk airs today at noon and at 5 p.m. here on KHOI, right here at 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org, as well as find links to guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk's a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you and join the Local Talk team.
Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Have a great weekend.